From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. More women are in prison, and approximately 1 in 25 enter pregnant. That means more babies are being born behind bars. Now more states are looking to allow mothers to stay with their babies in prison nurseries. Advocates say it's better for babies to be cared for by their mothers, even if she's a criminal behind bars, and it prevents recidivism. Others have hard questions about whether a baby ever belongs behind bars. This hour, On Point, babies born in prison. You can join us on air or online. Should mothers get to keep their babies while serving time? What's best for the child? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me today from Washington is Sarah Yeager, managing editor at The Atlantic. Her piece in the current issue is Prison Born. You can find a link at our website, onpointradio.org. Sarah Yeager, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So the population of female prisoners has exploded in the last few decades. Talk to us about the numbers.
That's right. Yeah. Since the 1970s, the number of women in prison has grown by 800%, more than 800%. Women remain a small percentage of the overall prison population. But since the 70s, with the crackdown on crime, their population has grown at twice the rate of the male incarceration rate.
And so generally, if a woman gives birth in prison, what happens to the baby?
In most cases, the baby is taken away a few hours after birth. The mother then returns to prison, and the baby goes to the care of relatives, if they're available, or otherwise to the foster system.
And so tell us how the idea of prison nurseries came about.
Yeah, so the idea is not new. It's actually more than 100 years old. But most of the existing prison nurseries in this country disappeared in the mid-20th century. And they've only recently started coming back. There are 8 states that now offer prison nurseries, and all but one of them opened in the last 2 decades. And it seems that more states have them on the way. Wyoming actually just finished up construction of a facility that they're working on staffing now. And Connecticut has been very interested in pursuing a nursery in their women's prison as well.
So is any woman, does any woman qualify to give birth in prison and to stay in one of these nurseries? I mean, what kind of crimes might eliminate a woman from that possibility?
Not necessarily. So my story focused on the prison nursery in New York at Bedford Hills Correctional Facility. And New York is the only state in the country where women are, by law, allowed to keep their children with them in prison, provided that it is found to be in the best interest of the child and that the woman is physically fit. But they still go through a screening process by the prison whereby they look at the woman's the type of crime that the woman is in for, but also things like history with the child welfare system. And in other states, there are other screening processes. But for the most part, there is somebody closely reviewing the case to make sure that the baby will be safe in prison and that it's also, you know, good for the woman as well.
So just generally speaking, what kinds of crimes allow women to participate in the program?
Well, in New York, by law, there's no hard and fast rule, but it tends to be that women with histories of violent crime, so something, you know, like murder, or those who have a history of child abuse are not allowed to participate in the program.
And how long can the baby stay in the prison nursery?
Again, that varies by state, but in most cases, it's about 18 months. In New York, the age limit is 1 year, but if the woman has a short sentence and is going to be out along with the baby, they're allowed to extend it by another 6 months, so 18 months total.
You talk a lot about the benefits to the mother and to the child in this story. Briefly, we'll get into that this hour, but briefly, what are the benefits, would you say, for the mother specifically first?
I'm sorry, I actually cut out. I missed the last part of your question.
What are the benefits for the mother who participates in a prison nursery program?
So there have been a number of studies going back to the early 2000s showing that women who participate in these programs have a lower recidivism rate than the overall population of women in prison. That's confounded a little bit by the fact that it's a slightly different population, you know, because of the screening process, because of the type of women perhaps who come in pregnant, it's not possible to know what direct effect there is by participating in the program. But it's thought that the intensity of the mothering experience and some of the skills that you learn from participating in the program might lower your chances of going back to prison. There was a study done in Nebraska, which has had a prison since the 1990s, which found that women who were in general population and switched over to the nursery program after they gave birth had a much lower frequency of misconduct reports, which showed that there was some impact on their behavior following the birth of the child and their ability to raise it in the prison setting.
Sarah Yeager, managing editor at The Atlantic. Hold on for just a moment. Let me bring in Alyssa Mayer, whom you profiled in your piece. She joins me from Kingston, New York. She gave birth to her son while she was serving time for violating her parole. Her original offense was a felony conviction for selling narcotics. She was released from prison this past April and lives with her 17-month-old son, Devante. Alyssa, so nice to have you with us. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you? How? First of all, tell me how far along you were when you were sent to prison.
I was about 5 months pregnant.
And what were your emotions at that time? I mean, having a baby under the best of circumstances can be overwhelming, to say the least. What was it like for you in the weeks before you had this child as you were sitting in a prison cell waiting to deliver?
I was scared. It was my first time. He's my first child. And I was scared. I was confused. I didn't really know what to expect. It's a bit of a scary experience because you're kind of by yourself and you're going through it by yourself. Can't really, like, see family and stuff very often. So, I was definitely confused and scared and didn't really know what was coming.
What did you think was going to happen when you had your baby? Did you know?
At first, I didn't. I didn't know about the program too much until I actually reached Bedford Hills. I was in the county at first. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know. I thought that I was going to have my child and that they were going to take him from me. And,
So Devante was born, I take it, in a hospital, right?
Yes. He was born in Westchester Hospital.
Was his dad there? Did his father know about the plan?
His father actually was not there. His father's actually another inmate. He's a ward of the state at the moment and was at the moment. But I was in contact with him. So he did know about the situation. And, once I did find out about the program in Bedford, we felt that that was the best thing for me and my child so that we could still hold a bond and I would still be able to have him.
So you came back from the hospital and went to the prison nursery. Can you describe it for us? What does the prison nursery look like?
It's kind of like, what can I describe it as? A family house. It's a building. They have a downstairs area where you walk into and that's where your strollers and stuff are for the baby when you have to bring them to the daycare center across the street. And then upstairs you walk in and it's, like a main lobby where the officer sits. And then they have a corridor that leads to a rec area, which is carpeted, and it's full of toys and couches. And then they have two corridors. One corridor is for babies that are 4 months and under, mm-hmm. They're newborn. And then there's another corridor for once your child hits 4 months and up, you move to the other side of the corridor, and you get your own room with your child. And They have a kitchen, an eating dining room. Mm.
So like a family sort of environment. But you don't forget that it's a correctional facility because there are officers just inside the entrance, right?
Yes, yes, there are. There are officers everywhere.
You have said you felt somewhat selfish for keeping your son in prison with you. Can you talk about that for a moment?
Yes. At first, I didn't really understand that feeling until once my child was born and he started to grow, and you see the curiosity in him, in your child, and just to know, like, my child didn't know what was on the outside world, but me as an adult, I knew what he was missing, as far as like being able to go to the park whenever we wanted to, or like even be in like a grocery store, or be in a car, or be around cars. So there was a period of time where I felt that I was kind of selfish, because in my own mind I was thinking, like, you know, he's missing out on so much. I mean, the reality of it is they're not really missing out on too much at that age. They're very young, and you can't really miss what you never knew. Mm. But there was a time frame where I did feel like I was selfish for keeping him in there. But in the end result, I can honestly say that it helped him strive. He progressed very fast, and they learned so much more in there. They have so much more hands-on contact and constant attention, and It's a very good place. It's a good place for them.
What do you say to critics, Alyssa, who suggest that, you know, it's not good for the baby, that prisoners like you were don't, dare I say, deserve the right to be with a child because of the crimes that were committed, or even that a baby would be better off on the outside in different conditions? What do you say to that?
I feel that once upon a time I might have felt like that, but it took for me to go through the process to, you have to understand that people make mistakes. You know, not everybody is a bad person, and some people deserve that extra chance. And I truly believe in my case that my child is what changed me and what made me want to be a better person. And who knows where I would be if I didn't have that experience? You know, who knows if I would still be down the same road? I feel that some mothers need that, and they need that experience to change the direction of their life. So, no, I don't feel that that's accurate.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about babies born in prison to their convicted mothers and a new push to keep them together while mom is serving time. Here's some sound, an interview on ABC in Illinois in August 2014. One inmate talking about how fortunate she feels to be able to have her baby with her in prison.
I'll be here until next year, so I would have missed out on a lot of firsts that you don't ever get back.
And here's Jacqueline McDougall, a former inmate in New York. She gave birth and raised her baby for 11 months in prison with her. In an interview with ABC, McDougall spoke about how she feels raising her son and how that will help her.
Just seeing his little face every day and knowing that I have to take care of him is going to be a big incentive for me, definitely. Mm.
We're talking with Sarah Yeager, managing editor for The Atlantic. She wrote the story Prison Born for the current issue. And with Alyssa Mayer, a mother who gave birth to her son Devonta in jail while serving a prison sentence. Alyssa, you heard what Jacqueline McDougall said, this former inmate, about her son and how seeing him and being with him every day in prison actually gave her incentive once she got out. Was it the same for you?
It was. It definitely changes your mind view on things to know that, you know, you did this on your own and you have responsibility for another life. Yes, I agree.
So you left Bedford Hills Correctional Facility at the end of April, just a few months ago, with your son, Devonta.
Yes.
How's he doing, first of all?
He's great. He's amazing. I can tell at first that he missed his little friends. He made a lot of young friends there, but I mean, he's definitely striving, and he like came out here and just jumped right into things like he's been here forever. Like, this wasn't too much new to him.
How do you think your life is different with the baby in prison with you than it would have been had he not been with you?
Like I was saying before, I feel that experience, being with him 24/7 and having that bond with him, it like rehabilitized me. It showed me a different way of life, and it gave me so much of a purpose. And to know that I had to come out here and do everything by all means to make sure that this child and myself were taken care of. Like, it has pushed me progressively over time. It really has.
What are you going to tell your son about these early years, about his early years?
I'm a firm believer on not hiding things. He will know everything every step of the way. I have documented, and we have pictures, and anything he wants to know, I'm definitely open to the subject and open to the situation, because it's not something that withheld him in life. It's something that helped me and him get to where it is that we're going.
Alyssa Mayer, I so appreciate your time today. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We really appreciate you and wish you all the best, and your son, too.
Thank you.
Thank you. Joining me now from Brooklyn, New York, is Tamar Kraft Stoller, director of the Women in Prison Project at the Correctional Association of New York, an independent nonprofit organization that advocates for women's issues in the criminal justice system. She authored the February report, Reproductive Injustice, the State of Reproductive Healthcare for Women in New York State Prisons. Tamar, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
We just heard from Alyssa Mayer. Sounds like quite a remarkable young woman. Talk to us about the state of reproductive health care for women like Alyssa in prisons, not just in New York, but across the country.
Yeah, well, much of what Alyssa talked about and said is echoed around the country. And as you and as Sarah pointed out in her article and at the top of the show, this is happening to hundreds of thousands of women, as the number of women has exploded who are incarcerated over the past 30, 40 years. What we found in our study, our organization, the Correctional Association of New York, has unique statutory authority to monitor prison conditions in New York State. We're actually one of only two organizations in the country that has this kind of statutory authority. And we carried out the study you mentioned, Reproductive Injustice, over the course of a five-year period, the most extensive study of its kind to date. And what we found was deeply, deeply troubling. We found that pregnant women are often forced to endure extremely poor conditions, really torturous conditions, poor housing, lack of support, especially if they're not in the nursery program, and that's certainly something I'd like to discuss. Officer mistreatment, really punishing childbirth experiences. You heard Alyssa talk about the fact that the father was not there, even if he hadn't been incarcerated. Corrections does not allow an individual, any family or friends to be with an incarcerated woman when she's given birth.
Well, you talk about insufficient food, even inadequate prenatal care at a lot of these facilities.
Every single woman we interviewed said that she did not get enough food when she was pregnant, when she was incarcerated. You have to really wonder what century we're talking about when you hear those kinds of comments.
And there are still correctional facilities in this country that shackle women during childbirth. Can you tell us about that?
That's right. Many, many do, including in New York State. Unfortunately, our organization led the effort in 2009 to pass an anti-shackling law in our state. Essentially, that bans the shackling of incarcerated pregnant women during childbirth. But what we found in our study is widespread violations of that law. We interviewed 27 women who gave birth after the legislation went into effect, and 23 of those 27 were shackled at some point in violation of the law. There are 21 states and the District of Columbia that have laws banning this barbaric practice. But in many of those states, we find what we found in New York, which is that there are violations of the law. And beyond that, we find that women are routinely shackled throughout their pregnancy. That's commonplace in New York State, even during the last trimester, anytime they're transported off prison grounds, sometimes even in full shackles with waist chains, with handcuffs, with ankle shackles. And again, that is also routine in other states across the country. There's actually a bill that's pending right now in front of the New York State governor. It hasn't been sent to the governor yet, but it has passed our legislature, thankfully, that would ban the practice of shackling pregnant women throughout their pregnancy when they're incarcerated in New York State. But it is routine, and it's really a human rights violation of the highest order.
Let me get a call in here. Aaron is in Detroit, Michigan. Aaron, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. Thank you. First of all, I want to say that this is a very, very difficult subject. It's a very delicate subject. And even though I know that some of the women may be in jail for crimes that are violent, it's hard to think that it wouldn't be beneficial for the woman and the child to be together in those first months and even those first years. Because I believe that it would create at least a desire for the mother to want to not be in prison or not come back if she has the child and wants to continue to nurture the child.
Aaron, thank you. We certainly heard that from Alyssa. Sarah Yeager, there are critics, though, of this program who question whether institutional facilities, corrections facilities, that limit so many basic rights should allow inmates to be active parents. What do you say to that?
Right, that's true. And like Alyssa said, I think it's important to understand if you're just hearing about prison nurseries kind of in a vacuum, it's easy to sort of be apprehensive of the idea of a newborn baby who is literally the embodiment of innocence, has never done anything wrong, being in what we understand culturally to be a very harsh, controlling institution. You know, like Alyssa said, the prison nursery at Bedford Hills, which is the one that I visited, does have the feeling of a family house. There isn't, you know, barbed wire wrapped around all of the windows, and there isn't, you know, there's bright paint on the walls, but it's still very much prison. And as Tamar has detailed, there is sort of an essential conflict between the autonomy that you need to be a mother and the submission that you have to be a prisoner. I would say that the reality, the unfortunate reality, is that a lot of these women don't have a better option. They are three times more likely than incarcerated fathers to be the primary caregivers of their children on the outside and may not have a better place for their child to go.
Here's Jay in Saratoga, New York. Hi, Jay. Welcome to On Point.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I'm just curious if anyone has any idea what this would cost the taxpayer.
Jay, thank you. What are the economics of this, Sarah Yeager?
They're complicated. I don't have current numbers for the spending on the New York program. I know it was calculated when Nebraska first opened a program back in the 90s that it had expensive startup costs, but that if you factored in the savings in reduced recidivism, which was believed to accompany the program, and perhaps in benefits to the child themselves, perhaps being less likely to become involved with the criminal justice system, that you would see savings over time.
Alice is in Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Alice. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I guess my question just kind of got answered a little bit. That is confusing. But so my question was, what do the statistics say as far as the children who stay with the moms and the children who don't stay with the moms? I'm thinking that even the reunification after the mom gets released from prison, that's got to be difficult, more difficult than for the child to just stay with the mom. We see the numbers on people who keep the dogs, like do the dogs with them to train them.
Mm-hmm.
Those are role model citizens, you know, prisoners. And imagine the better life the kid would have in the long term. It would be less money on the system because now we don't have to pay for foster care and all the traumatization that's going to happen after the effect to the child.
Tamar Stoller, would you speak to that? Alice, thank you so much for the call.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there really is no question that it's right to have prison nurseries and that we need prison nurseries and that they provide this incredible, valuable, critical resource for mothers and babies. They do reduce the risk of babies entering foster care. They do improve the odds that mothers and babies will remain together after prison. They do reduce recidivism, which is tremendous cost savings. And we really, the question not shouldn't be, should we have prison nurseries? But the question should really be, why are women incarcerated to begin with? What are the social injustices that have led women to prison to begin with? And how can we deal with those? The overwhelming majority of women who are incarcerated for things like crimes relating to addiction, to mental illness, to poverty, to domestic violence, to abuse. And we see our criminal justice system operating in a way that is really rife with racism, with gender-based oppression, with classism. And we really need to deal with those social injustices to make sure that women are able to have the resources and opportunities that they're provided sometimes for the first time in their lives in the prison nursery program. We need to make sure those resources and opportunities are available in the community.
Well, Sarah Yeager, that's right. I mean, there's a lot of parenting support, other mothers to talk to without, you know, distractions and certainly without, you know, drugs and alcohol, other significant issues that come into play when you're in the outside. That must be something that you consider with these nurseries as well.
Yeah, so Mary Byrne at Columbia University has been conducting the first longitudinal study of prison nurseries in this country, and her findings are in line with that idea. She has found that children raised in the prison nursery with their mother are have attachment outcomes. They're as likely to be securely attached, to have sort of a firm sense of themselves and trust in other people, as those who are raised in middle-class stable homes outside of prison. And that's a surprising finding, given that the odds are kind of stacked against these babies.
Right, and a significantly higher rate than the sample group of at-risk children, right?
Right, that's correct. And, you know, there have been a lot of studies showing that if a mother herself was insecurely attached to her parents, so if she sort of had a shaky, turbulent upbringing herself and internalize that insecurity, that she's likely to raise an insecure child. But what Mary Byrne's study found is that even though that it was true that many of the mothers in the Bedford program were themselves insecurely attached, they were able to raise secure children within the nursery environment. And when I talked to administrators there, they hypothesized that it had probably a lot to do with the fact that there is a lot of structure in prison, particularly in the Bedford program. There's parenting support. There is sort of a protection from a lot of the outside factors that can negatively influence a child's upbringing. And I think it's important to say that, you know, I think the idea has come up earlier in the conversation that maybe, you know, motherhood changes you. And I think it's a little too simplistic to say that because, you know, two-thirds of female prisoners in state prisons are mothers of minor children, and a lot of them have committed crimes that have left their children on the outside. So it's not as simple as that, but there does seem to be something about the structure and the intensity of the nursery experience, where it's just you and your baby for this concentrated amount of time with support, that really gives them a chance at a good first step in life.
Gives them the chance and breaks oftentimes some difficult cycles, familial cycles. Mary Byrne at Columbia also found that children who stayed in the nursery, prison nurseries, the longest had the best outcomes, essentially had a buffer in some ways against environmental risk when they left the prison. Uh-huh. Right, Sarah?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, again, going back to this idea that prison is a frightening, scary place for a child, Byrne's research is actually kind of showing the opposite of that, that it actually being in the prison and having the benefits of that structure may leave them better off than if they were on the outside. I would note, too, you know, the idea that prison nursery is better than foster care. I think that's a pretty simple argument to make, but it's true that a lot of the children aren't going to foster care. They're going to live with families, in a lot of cases, grandmothers, aunts, friends.
Right.
And, but a lot of studies have shown that caregivers on the outside are, they tend to be poor, they tend to be sick, especially in the case of grandparents. A lot of them are overburdened. So a lot of the same kind of stressors that make it difficult to raise a child can happen even if they're in a, you know, caring, supportive home outside that's not with their mother.
Tamar Kraft-Stoller, what would you add to that? I mean, you know, you see pictures of the barbed wire around a little playground and, you know, you might get a different idea than what actually is going on inside.
Right, it's absolutely right. And it's the critical to piggyback off the point that Sarah was making at the end, which is that it's a myth that mothers and babies are better off in prison. With programs that are impressive and valuable in the way that the Bedford Hills Nursery is and can give women the resources and support, you find these outcomes, the outcomes that are very positive that Dr. Byrne found. But we have things like community-based alternative programs, alternative to incarceration programs, where women can actually live in a community. And we see even far better outcomes for mothers and for their babies when women are allowed to remain in the community, contribute to the community, address underlying issues, really maintain that close connection with their babies. And we went to Bedford Hills. We evaluated the nursery program many, many times. And in our reproductive injustice study, which is available also on our website, I should say, I hope people check it out at correctionalassociation.org, we found one of the most troubling things was that the administration at Bedford Health Correctional Facility seems to be denying more and more women acceptance to the nursery. Mm. And given how high the stakes are with babies being able to form those critical, secure attachments to their mothers, We find that very troubling. And many times women are rejected because of things like being convicted of a violent crime or having prior involvement.
Tamar Kraft Stoller, I appreciate so much your time, director of the Women in Prison Project. We really appreciate your efforts to join us today. Thank you. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. More after this break. This is On Point.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about women who give birth behind bars and what's best for the babies, to stay with their mothers in prison while their mothers serve time. We're speaking with Sarah Yeager, managing editor for The Atlantic. She wrote the story Prison Born for the current issue. And joining me now from Williamsburg, Virginia, is James Dwyer, professor of law at William & Mary School of Law. James Dwyer, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
So what's your opposition to prison nurseries?
Well, I'd first point out that the claims about the research that you've heard in the last 10 minutes or so are false. There is no evidence that these programs reduce recidivism, and Professor Byrne's research actually shows bad outcomes for the great majority of children. Before I get into that, I would say that the first thing we need to talk about is the legal rights of children, and these programs are obviously unconstitutional. The state may not put people in prison simply because it thinks it might be good for them, without any court hearing, without a representative for the person who's going to be put in prison. So it's kind of shocking that this goes on with no resistance from the legal profession.
What is the answer to that question? Jay in Tulsa, Oklahoma here is asking that very thing. How do you get around illegal incarceration of a child? What do you say to that?
There is no way. I mean, the state may not put mentally disabled or mentally ill people in prison with relatives because it thinks it will reduce recidivism or it might be good for those adults. This would be obvious to all of us. We would be outraged if the state started doing this. We require the state to have an extraordinary justification for putting people in prison, and it's simply absolutely not allowed with anyone who's not been convicted of a crime.
So in your opinion, what's the biggest problem with a child that a child faces after spending the first years of life in prison?
That mom won't stay with the child. So what we see in Professor Byrne's research is that the great majority of mothers appear to have separated from the children after beginning the program. So the percentages that you were talking about of attachment are actually false. She started the study with 100 children and found that 18 at the one-year mark showed signs of secure attachment. And some of those 18 immediately separated from the mother at that point, disrupting the attachment. So, in fact, the rate of secure attachment is extremely low for these children. And once mom leaves prison, there's a very high rate of separation from the children. In some cases, it's return to prison, but just as often or more often, it's abandonment because of substance abuse or relationship with a man or some other reason.
So is a prison nursery in any way a better alternative than any existing, you know, alternatives on the outside? Is it better than where it could be, but than where they might end up?
It's really surprising that no one has mentioned the A word, adoption. Ms. Yeager says there's no better option. It's better than foster care. And I first say that it's extremely rare for these babies to go into foster care. It would have to be the case that no relative whatsoever is willing to take the baby. But in fact, there is the alternative of adoption. There is enormous demand for adoption of babies. There are qualified adoptive families who would love to have these children. They would have no difficulty getting placed, and they would not face the prospect of being separated from their parents thereafter, or having parents with no place to live, no job, a criminal history.
What about more comprehensive screening techniques used for these women, or perhaps a court-appointed advocate for the child? Would that change the calculus for you in any way?
Well, there absolutely should be an advocate for the children who can argue in courts that the child should have the placement that's in their best interest, all, you know, with all options considered, including adoption. But I think that in the cases where it is best for the child to remain in a legal relationship with the birth mother, and there are such cases, I'm not suggesting that none should, they are likely to be ones in which mom has very short time left in prison, in which case the child doesn't need to be with mom. The child can go stay with a relative temporarily, say it's 6 months, and when mom comes out, she can unite with the child and begin the attachment process.
Sarah Yeager, how do you respond to what you hear from what you hear here from the professor, that especially the percentage of the attachments are off? What do you make of that?
Yeah, so I take issue with his assertion that Burns' research actually shows bad outcomes for the children. So he mentioned the number of 18 securely attached children. It's important to note that that doesn't mean she found that only 18 out of the 100 mother-child pairs were securely attached. She, in the attachment study, she only reported results for 30 mother-child pairs, and that was for those for whom she was able to conduct an attachment assessment for both the mother and for the child at the one-year mark. And so it had for 70 of the 100 pairs, there's just no information. And so for Mr. Dwyer to say that, you know, we can assume that all of those children have insecure attachments is just really overreaching. The information that we do have shows that are able to form secure attachments when they go through the program together.
Let's get another caller in here. Sarah, Sheila is in Watertown, Massachusetts. Hi, Sheila. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
First of all, I just wanted to say as a mom that I found Mr. Dwyer's assertion that babies being separated from their moms for 6 months would just have no problem, you know, being reunited. I think that's really nonsense. But what I wanted to ask was there must be studies from other countries which take a less punitive approach to imprisonment where these things have been tried, and I just wondered what the outcomes have been, say, in some Northern European countries where one assumes they have this sort of program in place.
Sheila, thank you very much. Sarah Yeager, Germany does this in a very different way, don't they?
Yeah, very different. So Germany has a much lower incarceration rate than the United States generally, as do most other countries in the world. And so the number of women in prison is limited to begin with. But when a woman comes in pregnant, she is allowed to raise her child until they actually reach school age. For the women with less serious offenses, they live in sort of an open house where the staff will take the child out on field trips. You know, take them to the zoo, take them for a hike through the woods. And for mothers with children at home, they're actually allowed to leave the prison grounds and go home during the day. It's treated as sort of a work release to raise your children, to be able to make dinner, to tuck your children into bed, and then check yourself back into prison at night.
Hmm. James Dwyer, are there examples in other countries that you point to based on the caller here that to suggest that prison nurseries don't work?
There is research in England from the 1980s, I believe, that showed negative developmental outcomes for children, but you don't see a lot of research on it. What's interesting is that in many other countries, it's regarded as a kind of national shame that children are in prison, but in most other countries, they just don't have foster care and adoption systems that could take the children, and families are too poor to take the children, but there's a general assumption that that would be better, that anything would be better than the children being in prison.
Here's Mark.
As Yeager points out, the Germany system is quite different from what we have here.
James, thank you. Here's Mark in Berlin, Vermont. Mark, welcome to One Point.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was glad to hear the constitutional issue being brought up, but what I think what everybody is failing to examine here is the fact that I live in the state of Vermont, for example, and while the women in the state of Vermont have a nice little daycare and toys and get to spend time with their children, the men can't even have contact. And I cannot think of a constitutional scenario where women would be allowed to have a program such as this and it's not equally administered to the men that are also incarcerated, that may have children and want to choose to be the guardian parent for those children.
Mark.
And I think it's very important that we examine that, because, you know, eventually it will become an issue as these programs get going, and the men will, you know, eventually, you know, the Supreme Court will have to look at the rights of the men.
Mark, thank you. I'm so glad you called to bring that up. Sarah Yeager, what about that?
Yeah, so there are a couple of different reasons that these programs are extended only to women. One is historical. When these prisons, prison nurseries were first beginning to flourish in the progressive era, they were founded on kind of a very deep gender ideology of maternalism, which was the idea that motherhood would bring out innate virtues in a woman, and that the presence of children, along with the things like sewing classes and planting flowers, would kind of have a softening influence on her behavior. Obviously, that idea got dropped a long time ago. But the reason that they continue to be extended only to women is just the simple fact that women are the ones who are carrying children into the prison and therefore are sort of making it the prison's mm-hmm. problem to determine whether they should be separated or kept together, and men don't get pregnant.
James Dwyer, how do you respond to Mark? What about the dads on this issue?
It's plausible that at some point men would complain that, you know, if you have men with similar profiles, they've only committed nonviolent crimes and they're going to be in a separate unit and so forth. But I doubt they would ever succeed.
Let's get Steve in here from Atlanta, Georgia. Steve, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi, welcome.
Hi. Okay, I was wondering if, I know there's been plenty of longitudinal studies about foster children, how they're emotional makeup is affected by that fact that they were foster children. I wonder if the program has been up long enough for these prison babies for them to really see the long-term effect, the stigma maybe attached to being born in prison, if that has adverse outcomes for them later in life.
Steve, thank you. Sarah Yeager?
Yeah, this actually goes back to a point that Mr. Dwyer made earlier, which is that the majority, he said, of pairs appear to be separated, you know, post or during the nursery experience. Dr. Byrne actually found that at the 3-year follow-up, which is the latest one she did, that the majority actually were together. Many did get separated during the nursery stay, and some experienced brief separations afterward. But for the most part, the women were ending up with their babies. But she... another member of her team was the lead author of a study that came out last year, which found that children raised in a prison nursery, so for whatever amount of time, when compared to those who had been separated from their mothers as babies or toddlers as a result of her incarceration, had much lower rates, significantly lower rates of behavioral problems, including anxious behavior, being withdrawn and depressed. And it was important to note that that was true whether or not the baby who'd been in the nursery program was currently living with an alternative caregiver or with the mother herself. And, you know, the important thing about attachment theory is that it's an internal sense of security. So even if the baby ends up later separated from the mother for a short period of time or permanently, there seems to be a benefit to having that secure attachment that allows the baby to form secure attachments to other people.
Here's Emily in Somerville, Massachusetts. Hi, Emily. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
Great discussion. I want to take it a step further than individual outcomes.
Okay.
I'm a doula for low-income women in Boston, and I see that birth can be, it's a very vulnerable time, and it's a time that women can either you know, transform into, you know, quite activated women, or, you know, can really be disempowered.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, you know, I'd like to make this a public and community health issue, and I'm thinking that, you know, there's this rehabilitation component of incarceration that we really don't deal with that much in the United States, and I'm wondering if there's any programs that educate the women and make them into this cadre of community health workers or community health educators that then they are deployed back into their communities, potentially with, you know, funding from grants or something, and then they can communicate and work with women and parents in their communities and really kind of break that cycle.
Mm-hmm. Emily, I hear it. It's an idea for a powerful model. In Emily's perspective, Sarah Yeager, are there?
You know, I don't know of any programs that sort of dispatch former prisoners out to their communities to sort of share the lessons that they've learned. But I do know that the program at Bedford Hills makes a lot of programs available to parents, both to those who are in the nursery program, but also to mothers who have children at home. There are parenting classes. There are lessons about, you know, self-reflection and ways to think before reacting. So it's definitely an emphasis of the program for the individual mothers, but I'm not sure whether it's moving out to the community level at all.
James Dwyer, would you like to see these prison nurseries closed in the long term?
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's important that Ms. Yeager and legislators look more closely at the research. In fact, Professor Burns' team assessed an additional 42 children for attachment, and she simply declined to report the results. So there's a lot of very selective reporting of research and mischaracterization of the results. And there's no question that these children would be better off being adopted if the alternative is, you know, a mother who's going to separate or a mother who's going to maltreat because of her own lifelong struggles with mental health issues stemming from her own bad childhood.
Sarah Yeager, 8 states now have prison nurseries, one opening, what did you say, in Wyoming, I believe?
Yes.
What do you see the long-term impact of these? Obviously, you have quite a different opinion than James Dwyer.
Yeah. You know, I don't see these programs ever becoming incredibly widespread. They affect a fairly small number of women, and the prison system has bigger things to deal with. And so when there are state budget crises, these programs are the first thing to go. But I would say, to his point about adoption, I certainly agree that women should know that adoption is an option, just as all women should know that if they feel unable or unwilling to care for their child, that they could place it with another person who would want to care for it. But I would also say that we would never step in a situation outside of prison where a woman has not demonstrated an inability to care for her child and say that because of your certain demographic characteristics, because of who we think you might be, you're not able to have the right to raise your child. And I would say that's a dangerous assumption.
Sarah Yeager, managing editor at The Atlantic. Her new piece is Prison Born in the Current Issue. Thank you so much for being with us, Sarah.
Thank you for having me.
And James Dwyer, professor of law at William & Mary School of Law. I appreciate your time today, James. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, beloved children's author Judy Blume is with us. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.